Welcome back to the Don't Worry About It podcast, where we talk all things mental health related, from anxiety to depression, from happiness to sadness, and all emotions and feelings in between. My name is David Izzo, and I started this podcast to help facilitate conversations related to mental health topics. On this week's episode, Zach Rocklin joined the podcast to share his personal story dealing with anxiety and panic attacks. Zach's story is a reminder that just because you are struggling doesn't mean that you're locked into that for the rest of your life. There's a way out, whether that's through therapy, medication, meditation, or whatever it is that works for you, you can overcome it. I learned a lot from Zach and inspired me in a lot of ways. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. Thanks so much for listening. Zach Rocklin, welcome to the Don't Worry About It podcast. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me today, dude.
Yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time to join me for a chat. I'm looking forward to it. And if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself to the audience.
Sure. My name is Zachary Rocklin. I'm 23 years old. And I just finished Yeshiva University, and I am now about to start a job next week, actually.
Congratulations. Finishing college is a big accomplishment. It's something that a lot of people take for granted, and that they don't realize how big of a milestone it kind of is. I remember when I graduated, it was kind of like, now what? But it's really cool. And, you know, I'm very curious to hear, you know, at such a young age, why you're interested in coming onto this podcast and having a conversation on mental health.
So ever since I was a little kid, and I've had issues, I guess, suffering from anxiety, depression, and through my whole life, really, and through all of my schooling and all of my, you know, young age, since I could really remember, I've struggled with anxiety. And in different, sometimes it was more serious than other times. But I feel like I want to shed light on, you know, that being anxious is okay, and you can live with it, and you could conquer it.
Wow. I mean, I think that's awesome. When you say you were, experiencing anxiety from such a young age, how young are we talking?
So I believe like the first time I ever had anxiety, or that I can remember, or pinpoint the feeling, I was in fifth grade. I was going to sleepaway camp, and it wasn't even the first time I was going to sleepaway camp. It was the second time. But my mom had been ill. They weren't really sure what it was. And I was young. I was going into fifth grade. So I just finished fourth grade. And I think my mom was like basically like bedridden for like a year and a half. So I was spending a lot of time with my mother. And then I was very excited to go to camp as if nothing was wrong. And then when I went to camp, I realized that I had become so codependent on my mother that I could not function without being with my mother. Now, this is the first time. I'm probably 10 years old at this time. And I feel like I have these like feelings about like, what if I never see my mom again? What if something happens to me? What if something happens to her? And like, that's the first time where I think I start feeling this anxiety, or the first time that I can pinpoint feeling an anxious feeling, or feeling a feeling of not being in control.
Wow, I mean, it just stirred something up in me. I remember being a kid. And going away around the same age, actually, you were that fourth into fifth grade, and was supposed to go for like a sleepover. And I would get, when time came, like I used to be excited to go to these things. And then when the time would come that I actually have to go, I would start to have a ton of panic start to set in. Adrenaline would start pumping. My heart would beat so fast, and I would start sweating. And I never understood until very recently, and I didn't really understand it. I didn't pinpoint it until right now that was probably one of the first times I myself also experienced anxiety. And it's like interesting to hear somebody else, and obviously for different reasons, right? Your mother was sick and you're spending a lot of time with her and you had a lot of pacing thoughts. How did you deal with it? What was the response? Were you able to go to camp, or did it take away from it?
So if I recall, I basically ended up going to camp. I think I was excited to go to camp, actually. And I got myself to camp. And then when I got to camp, I realized like, uh-oh, like this is not going to be good. Like I have a little bit of an issue here. Mom's not here. And I think when that happened, I mean, I remember I was going to the camp mom. I was crying every day until I sort of like got into this groove of like, you know, it's only temporary and I can speak to my mom whenever I want to speak to her. And I mean, even though that was like a temporary fix and I did push myself through that summer, it still was not easy.
Yeah, I can't imagine being going through a whole summer where you're emotionally at such a young age, like crying a lot, and kids are pretty ruthless. I'm sure that interacting with other kids, were they able to kind of understand what you were going through, or were they ruthless and not as kind?
So honestly, I think it was like we were at a younger age, and I really, if I recall correctly, we, you know, kids like weren't like, oh, you're such a baby that you're crying. People were more like, you know, like, oh, like one night I would cry, the next night another kid would cry. Like it was just like normal because we're 10 years old and we're away from our parents for the first time, or a lot of us for the first time. And it's like, okay, you know, it's understandable. I don't think we're at that point yet where it's like, okay, dude, like relax. You're 12 years old. You're okay being away from your parents.
Right. No, I mean, thank God. I cannot imagine, you know, kids can be quite, kids don't really understand it. Adults aren't always the best at handling this stuff either. So it's good. I'm glad to hear. So you're experienced, this is the first time you experience anxiety, and you get through the summer. And then does the anxiety go away, or does it linger within you?
So I get through the summer, and it must be that the anxiety is still lingering, because the next thing I can remember, or the next thing that I remember in my anxiety timeline, as I can call it, I'm in therapy, and I don't want to be in therapy. I have no desire to be in therapy. I think it's stupid. I remember fighting with my mom to go to therapy. She had to bribe me to go to therapy. I remember even giving the therapist a hard time. I remember sitting, like, let's say the therapy appointment would be at 9:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and at 9:31, the therapist didn't call me in yet. I remember texting my mom, this guy is wasting our money. Like, but it was like a minute late. And I remember like trying to do everything possible to not go into therapy. I was very young, which I, you know, understand. I wasn't really sure what was going on. I definitely knew that I had a separation issue. I couldn't really go away. I couldn't really sleep other people's houses. But my mom and my father, they decided that it would be a good idea for me to start therapy. And, you know, in retrospect, it was smart of them. I think at the time, it's like kind of like when you give a baby a shot and the baby's crying because the baby doesn't understand. But like, you know, you as the parent, you know, you need to vaccinate your child, and it's important. So I think like in some way, like that was what it was.
No, I think, listen, I get it. I remember going to the first time I went to therapy, my parents forced me at like 15. And I remember the exact same thing you said. The guy was a minute late. I remember texting or said, like thinking, at least thinking in my head, like this guy, what the hell's going on here? He's a minute late. He's wasting money. He's wasting my time. Disrespectful. How dare the person? And then I remember like, And then just sitting in, and I didn't take the therapy. For personally, I didn't take the therapy at all. I remember the first three sessions I went, I was so pissed off. I just sat there silent for 50 minutes, not speaking one word. But I think it's like very interesting to hear somebody else going through, you know, having the exact same thoughts that I did. And so you're going, your parents are you don't want to be in therapy. Your parents are forcing you to go to therapy. Did it take you a while to open up to the therapist, or how did those sessions go? In the beginning.
So I remember once I was in therapy and once I was there and once we got into some sort of conversation, I don't think I was hesitant because I said to myself, this is a 45 minute session and like, I'm not going to sit here and do nothing. I may as well try to, you know, I'm not sure if that's exactly what went through my mind, but I remember that the time would pass if I spoke.
Right.
So I figured that would be a good way to go about these sessions even if I didn't want to go to them, I would just say to myself, I have to be there. My parents are not letting me, like they're forcing me to go. So I may as well talk. And I think that was like the first time in those years, that was like the first time where I realized like, this may not be a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really, I think that's, that makes a lot of sense. You're in therapy, you're starting to speak. Time's now, instead of sitting there miserable for 45 minutes or 50 minutes, whatever the time is, you can actually start to talk, and you might start to feel something. You might feel a little better. You might just feel cathartic. It's, I mean, therapy is, it can be, if you're able to connect and to talk, often people leave the office feeling a sense of relief. They feel therapeutic. It feels good. I remember walking out feeling multiple times, just feeling exhausted, but feeling like great, but just tired. And I think at such a young age, the fact that you were able to identify that this could be something that's useful is pretty impressive, right? It could have been very easy for you to reject it. And did he help you, or she help you, the therapist help you get over this codependence, or was it just somebody you were talking to?
So he ultimately helped me get over the codependence. I think it took many years. Right. I think it was something that I struggled with, and I'm more than happy to go into more detail, but ultimately, yes, he did help me get past it, and he did help me, and I give him credit for helping me and you know, being able to get me to a point where I was able to be independent.
And how is the codependency affecting your life? Remind me, at what you're, how old?
So I'm probably, I would say now, like I'm in fifth, sixth grade, and therapy is every Sunday morning.
Oh, wow. So you're 11 to 12 years old, and you have to go wake up on your one day off from school.
Right.
That's tough.
I mean, I wasn't, at that time, I wasn't such a sleeper, but still, like, I remember, like, it affected, like, a lot of guys played hockey on Sunday mornings and basketball. And, like, I remember, like, it definitely took away, you know, from my, or I felt that it was, like, taking away, and, like, oh, well, I'm not going to be there. So everyone's going to think, like, oh, like, somebody's up with Zach. Like, why does he come on Sundays to play hockey with us or something?
Right. I was going to, my next question was going to be how it affected your personal life. Do you have anyone, any of your friends you were able to confide in and tell them about your problems? I mean, it's such a young age. Fifth, sixth grade is 11, 12 years old. It's pretty young.
At that point, I don't think there was anybody who I felt comfortable enough talking to. Definitely didn't confide with anybody. I felt like I was, you know, that it was like something that was between my parents and I. And I was never really one to be private about anything. So to me, it wasn't something I was embarrassed about. It just was something that I felt like was a nuisance to in my life. Like I just felt like it was annoying that on Sunday mornings I had to go and do this. Right. And that was it. Like that was the frustration. And like, it was just annoying. I remember we had like on Sunday mornings in sixth grade, we had like a class for all the boys that were going to be bar mitzvahed that year. And I remember they like had a rabbi speaking to us every Sunday morning after Minyan. So first they forced us to go to Minyan. Then they gave us donuts and orange juice. But then I remember my father and I always had to leave 15 minutes before it was over to run to my therapist. Ah. So again, like another activity, I guess, that was cut short, regardless of if it was fun or not. Another activity where I actively was leaving or missing in action to go to my therapist.
Right. Not only do you miss donuts and orange juice, regardless, I don't know if you want it to be at Minyan or not be at Minyan, but like that's a pretty like incentive. Like people want to do that, and I get it. And also you got to see maybe your friends, you got to talk. And then every Sunday, people always wonder why you're leaving 15 minutes early. And then it's like another thing. Now is another thing I have to explain that I can't really go so far into detail about.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So talk to me a little bit about, I mean, I'm just curious to hear about how this progresses. You know, you mentioned it took a few years for you to get over it. Was it just independence, codependency that you were dealing with? Were there any other, you know, issues that were going on?
So at this time, and I would say like my from fifth to eighth grade, cause I'll give it like that time. So I saw my therapist, I think pretty regularly, if not, you know, every week, probably every other week. But then going into seventh grade, I decided to go to camp again. I took a summer off and then I decided to go back to camp, and I had a great experience and I wasn't homesick, and my mother had, you know, gotten better, and she had, you know, been going to work. So everything kind of was like on the up up, and I felt like, in some way things were falling into place. The fact that I was able it, that I was even able to go to camp, I think was a big deal for myself. So 7th and 8th grade, I'm good. I'm going to camp. I do see my therapist though, for anxiety, just like with school, and I hated going to school, and I hated, and it wasn't even like once I was in school, I was fine, but I think it was the anticipation. I remember the anticipation of a week, and I always had this Sunday night, like, oh, I'm not going to school tomorrow. And I remember always like with my parents on Sunday, I would see my therapist Sunday morning, and it would be all good. We would talk it out, and then Sunday night, I would say to my parents, I'm not going to school tomorrow.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be able to relate with that feeling on Sunday night. This some people call it the Sunday scaries. You wake up in the morning, you come into therapy, you're feeling right, you're feeling great, like, oh, it's all going to be good, and then you're going to, then you realize I have to go to school tomorrow, and it's that anticipation Sunday night for Monday morning, and that's a big part of what anxiety is. It's fear. It's you're not with control, and you're just anticipating. You just build it up in your head, and then once you get to school, it's like it wasn't that big of a deal. But in those moments, in those times, it can feel like your world is crumbling.
Right. And I think it did. Like, I think that those feelings, now looking back in retrospect, like obviously they were silly, and obviously I was in middle school, I was in like 7th and 8th grade, and once I got to school and once I was with my friends, like everything kind of like subsided, and once we were at lunch on Monday, it was like, okay, like it's fine. It's just like that anticipation of Sunday night. Which is annoying because it's like, oh, you're going from the freedom of the weekend, and everyone can relate to this feeling. But I had like an anxiety about it. And it's interesting because the anxiety about it only happened on Sundays, and it lasted until Sunday night. Monday morning, if I could recall correctly, other than the couple of times where I, pretended to be sick and stayed home, Sunday night I was fine. Monday morning I was fine. I was in school. But I remember still having like anxiety, and like it was like, I don't know if it was exactly anxiety, but it was just like the intimidation of a full week ahead of me.
Right. And so you're in 7th and 8th grade, you're going to camp. Was that successful? Were you able to get through camp?
Camp was successful at that point. I was fine in camp. I was doing well. I mean, as much as I still felt like I was a mama's boy in a way, and like I missed my parents a lot, it was more of like I was able to put my emotions and my enjoyment of camp on top of those feelings, and that sort of like pushed out the anxiety because I wanted to be in camp, and I wanted to be playing leagues, and I wanted to be hanging out with girls and my friends, and I wanted camp. So I think because of the amount that I wanted camp, I was able to like in some way like trump out those feelings and get rid of them.
Yeah, I think you're just trying to live. It sounds like you're just trying to live like you're like any kid. I just want to be like everyone else. I want to run around. I want to play sports. I want to start talking to girls, hanging out, living a normal life. But underneath it all, you have, I don't want to, it's like a secret because like you're not telling anyone. No one really knows it about you, but you just have this whole underlying thing that you're just building a life on top of.
Correct.
I think the
Correct.
way you said it about building building it on top is a very very important way of putting it, because it doesn't take away from what's there. It's not that it disappeared. You just were able to put it away to the side and just live, figure out a way to live your life. Now you're going to high school, and listen, a young kid's life is never more, it's probably never like more confusing and harder than high school, than those ages from like 14
Right.
to 18. It's like pretty interesting time. What happens next?
So this is where the story gets a little bit, I guess, this is like the climax of it in a way. I go to camp end of 8th grade, amazing. I'm going to high school, and I don't mean to bash on the school, but I went to Ramaz, and it was not the place for me. I had applied to Ramaz and Frisch. I got into Frisch, but my father works at Ramaz, so he kind of like pushed me to go to Ramaz. So I 9th grade, I start Ramaz High School. And it starts off like okay. people are, you know, everyone's trying to get to know each other and everyone's doing okay. And like, you know, it's like fine. And school is hard because it's Ramaz and everyone's, you know, extremely nervous because they're just freshmen in Ramaz. And I don't know why, but I like became a kid who I grew up with, who was like in a similar situation to me. Like his family was like big in the community and he and I just felt like a connection to him and like felt like that we both wanted to be like this kind of like rebellious feeling. He had like come up to me and he's like, hey, like, do you want to smoke with me? And he's 2 years older than me. And I said, you know what? Sure. Why not? So, I'll give you like the exact place. We're at Team Minyan Kiddush on Shabbos. And he asked me if I want to smoke with him. And I said, sure, why not? So we go. And now we make this a practice.
And to clarify, when you say smoke, you mean?
Smoke weed on, yeah, smoke
no,
weed.
No, I mean, some people, I mean, I don't know, cigarettes could have been. Just wanted
to smoke marijuana.
So you're in ninth grade, you're in a new environment. Did you go to Ramaz Lower School also? Okay,
yes.
So you're going into a high school that you didn't necessarily really want to go to. But because your dad was a teaching there, you felt like you were – did you feel like you really had a say in it, or was it a predetermined action?
So my parents, honestly, like I have to give them a lot of credit. They let me make the decision. I mean, my father and I had many conversations, which I think ended up pushing me to choose Ramaz at that point. And so I decided that was going to be the place where I went. And Ramaz, if you know, is a, you know, fast paced, everyone's, you know, very academic, but social life is difficult and people are, you know, as much as people are great and as much as I had my friends from middle school, it's not an easy place. And I think I got lost there in a way. And I think, and I don't want to go too off for my story here, but I think, which I could elaborate on this after, but I think that putting myself in that situation kind of put me into what I'm about to tell you.
Right. Well, I think understanding where you're at is important to, it is going to tell a lot about how you, where you end up going. I think, listen, 14 new school, I guess maybe you probably went to it with probably Ramaz Lower School. A lot of kids went to you. So you probably knew a lot of the kids. If you had friends that went there with you, or maybe your friends went to other schools. I know Ramaz. I mean, I know how high pressure situation Ramaz is. My older brother went there. I went to SAR. I know a lot about not having a choice of where you go. End of fifth grade, towards the end of fifth grade, and I was in Moriah with all my Englewood friends from Englewood, and my parents pulled me aside one night and said, the next day you're spending a half day at the school called SAR. Never heard of SAR. Didn't know that I knew anyone at SAR. At all. It turned out I knew a couple kids, but go there, find out that I don't have a choice. I'm going there the next year, sixth grade, new school. What, I have no idea what's going on. High pressure situation. Then I come to high school. All my friends from Mariah that I'm seeing on the weekends but never see during the week, they're all going to Frisch. None of them are going to SAR, and I have no choice. I have to go to SAR now. So I get the high pressure situation of not being able to choose. And it's tough when you don't really feel like you're making your own choice. And even if you do now, what happens now if I made my decision, it's not working out. I think the context, giving right, so, a lot of context yeah. to the, that, at what's going on at that age. Listen, high school is tough as it is, but freshman year itself, it's very easy for kids to get lost.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I got lost in the wrong place. I wanted to hang out with older kids. Like I thought like I was cool. I thought I was doing a cool thing, and this went on for a couple of months where I'd go and smoke at this kid's house after shul every week. And one week, all of a sudden, like, he's like, hey, Zach, like, let's try, you know, hitting a bong. And I'm like, okay, like, sure, whatever, sounds good. And we ripped his bong, and I remember out of nowhere, I was like, started feeling like I was being lifted up. And I was like, holy shit, I'm dying. Like, my heart starts beating fast, my head's going in a million directions. And I'm like bugging out and I start tripping like crazy. And I remember the kid's like, yo, relax, you're fine, you're fine. I'm like, no, I'm dying. He's like, no, relax, you're fine. And I actually end up making him walk me home. And I get home and he's like, don't tell your parents. Don't tell your parents what happened. Just go to sleep. You'll sleep it off and be fine. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, I'm not fine. Like, something's wrong. And so I tell my parents that, you know, I smoked and that, you know, I know it was bad and I apologize and I'm having a really bad, like, I don't know what to do. Like, I think I'm dying, whatever. And my father being in working in Ramaz for so many years is like, relax. It was probably just bad, you know, bad marijuana. Like, you're okay. I have water, relax, whatever. And my parents like got me out of it and I was fine. And I thought I was free. Like, I thought I was, you know, I thought that, you know, I just can't smoke and that's it. And move on with my life. No problem. About 2 weeks later, after I hadn't smoked since then. 2 weeks later, I'm at a Ranger game with a friend. And all of a sudden, I start to feel the same feelings that I felt when I smoked. My heart starts beating fast. I start feeling like I'm being lifted up. I start sweating. And now I'm getting nervous because I didn't smoke any weed. Why am I feeling this way? Why am I having these feelings? And I remember I called my mom. She had to come to Madison Square Garden to pick me up. And for like 2 weeks, I remember going to see doctors and cardiologists and pulmonologists, just everything. And every doctor said the same thing. You're fine. You're fine. So finally, you know, I went to my therapist. What did you say?
Sounds like you're going to all the physical doctors trying to find something that's wrong with you, and no one's asking the obvious question, right? What's correct. Going on internally?
Correct. And I finally go to my therapist, and he asks me what the symptoms were, and he says, "I hate to break it to you, but you've been having panic attacks. These are panic attacks, and they're very controllable, and you're going to be okay." And at that point I was still nervous. I'm like, maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, I really felt like I was dying. And that was like the beginning of a very difficult uphill battle that I think without my therapist, I would not have been able to get through. I remember after that Madison Square Garden moment, every moment of my life for the next, I would say, 3.5 years, I had anxiety. I had to live with anxiety, but like tough anxiety, anxiety of constantly being worried. Am I going to die today? Am I going to have an allergic reaction? Stuff that never had even crossed my mind in my life. I mean, I'm not even allergic to anything. And it kind of like put me like in my place in a way that like I realized I couldn't do what I normally was able to do.
You're smoking weed and everything's fine, and then one time you hit a bong. For those who don't smoke, a bong is just a more intense way of more concentrated hit of taking the THC into your system, and you have a freak out. You get home. Luckily enough, your parents are pretty cool about it. It seems, I'm sure there may have been a punishment, but in the moment, your parents kind of just were able to make you feel like you were safe and okay, and I guess deal with it. And then you stop smoking. You don't smoke again, and then the panic sets in. You start having panic attacks. And for those who have never experienced a panic attack, I think you, as somebody who's experienced them before, I think you described it. Described one version of it, right, where you really do feel like you think you're dying. You seize up. You start. I know for me personally, I've had some that were so bad that I've had them come in really inappropriate times in the middle of classes before. I've had to run out and sit on the bathroom floor shaking in a stall until it subsided. But you shake, your heart beats. You feel like you don't understand what's going on. It feels like the world is crumbling around you and your life is over. There's no coming back from it. And then it stops, and then you're like, okay. And then the anticipation or the uncertainty of that and the understanding that you don't know when it can come. It can come at any time, and you just wait and wait and wait until it comes. And then you can get to a moment where you think it's not going to come again, right? You don't feel as anxious, and you start to let your guard down, and then boom, you can get hit with one. And that compounds and compounds and compounds, and you live on edge. I think I'm very curious to hear know, you talk, spoke about for the next 3.5 years, I can't imagine, I can only imagine the terror that you lived in.
So I think you actually describe it perfectly, that I, that's, that was it. I lived every moment anticipating, waiting for a panic attack. And I can, I can't really even pinpoint times where it happened again, but it was living with that fear of the, of a panic attack coming on. And I was so scared and I was shaken out of my skin from the experience of a panic attack that I was so scared that it would happen again and that I wouldn't know what to do with myself. And that, I would say that was January, February of my freshman year of high school. And everything from that point went downhill. I wasn't hanging out with friends. I went home right after school. I stopped going away for Shabbos. And now I'm at this point where it's like, am I going to go to camp? Am I going to be able to get through camp? What the heck am I supposed to do? And I'm seeing my therapist now once a week. And he's helping me, and we're slowly getting through this, and we're slowly getting through this. And every week, you know, we're trying to get to the root of problems. And I realize that I'm anxious about a lot of things, and they're all building up. And that's probably what's happening to me. And I'm anxious about a lot of things, and I'm anxious about having a panic attack. And the fact that I'm anxious about having a panic attack is adding to the anxiety. So I'm not able to function right now alone. I'm constantly have my phone on me, texting my parents. I remember Shabbos being terrible because I couldn't leave my parents. It was a disaster.
I feel everything you're saying. It hits home. I get what you were feeling. I can the way you're speaking about it, like drug, it brings back, you know, my own experience. And I know what that terror feels like. It's, You have an underlying anxiety, and now you're having anxiety about things that people can, like, it's normal to be anxious about, grades, school, girl, like so many things that are going on in your life. And now you have anxiety about your own anxiety. It's a self fulfilling monster. It just eats, it just gobbles up, your anxiety is gobbling up the anxiety about your own anxiety and just feeding the, just feeds the monster. And you're on edge, and you're, and when you're on edge all the time, and you know, you just take it like that, it's really bad. But for those who have never experienced it, it doesn't just sit there. It impacts every part of your life. I'm sure you can stay up all night not just thinking about all these thoughts, and you don't, now you're not sleeping. And sleep is such an important function for living a healthy life, on and internally and physically in terms of recovery. And so you may not be sleeping. It impedes you from actually building, connecting with other people and building relationships. You're a ticking time. You feel like you're a ticking time bomb. Who wants to be friends with the ticking time bomb? How do I actually connect and create relationships? And you're not actually able to do a lot of the things that can help you not be as anxious or get through it, right? Just having a good day or a good night, like consecutively in a row, can go a long way. And I think a lot of people forget, hear the story and hear understand like the trauma and forget about all the days and hours and minutes and seconds that go into it.
Right. And I mean, from that point, I completely, you know, shut down that year, ninth grade. I spent a lot of my time in the school therapist's office, and I spent a lot of my time with my parents, and it was really not a good year. I remember just being depressed. I was like, I'm never gonna be able to live. I'm never gonna be able to get married. I'm never gonna be able to be away from my parents again. I'm never gonna be able to have a job. I'm never gonna be able to do basic things. And this feeling, this was like the darkest possible feeling. I think these feelings were like the darkest feelings I ever had. I was like, I'm so stuck and I'm so screwed with my emotions. I'm never gonna be able to not have these emotions. And like, as you said before, and I think you said it perfectly, like the monster fed itself. So it's like this constant, like, I'm having anxiety. Oh, so now I'm having more anxiety. Oh, but I'm having anxiety about a panic attack that may happen. So now you're in constant fear, and it's only feeding itself. It's not getting any better. And like, I really like experienced a lot of that. And it took me south. It really took me south. And I was seeing my therapist religiously now, once, twice a week, sometimes double sessions. And I kind of felt like maybe I, in order to get rid of anxiety or get rid of this part of my life, I need to make a big change. So I said to my parents, I'm leaving Ramaz. Like, I can't do this. So I'm working with my therapist. I'm working with my parents. Now I'm starting to inquire about Frisch. And finally, the year is slowly coming to an end. I'm getting to an okay place with my therapist. He's helping me, get the confidence to go to camp. And he's pushing me and helping me, and everything's working out with Frisch. Sounds like, I'm going to be able to go next year, no problem. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but I kind of said to my parents, so that, you know what? Like, the school year was about to end. I said to my parents, you know what? I'm fine. I'm going to stay at Ramaz. And to make a long story short, well, I don't really know if there's a way to make this story shorter than it is. But I end up enrolling for my sophomore year at Ramaz, and I end up going to camp.
Well,
I remember I'm making my mom call camp and calling the infirmary and making sure that they know, like, I have anxiety, and if I ever need to speak to her, that it's, I should be able to speak to her whenever I can, whenever I need, and that, that the nurses should know that if I run in, thinking that I'm dying, that I'm not dying, it's just that I'm having a panic attack or I'm having anxiety. And ultimately, that was a really big step for me.
it seems like you start taking control back in your life. It seems like you're calling the
So I
shots, right? You're telling your parents, I'm done with Frisch. I don't know what happened between that moment and where you decide I'm st I can I don't know. It seems like you got some sense of relief where you felt like I can do this. I can get through this at Ramaz. I don't need to put it all in Ramaz. And not only that, building on that momentum, I'm going to camp. But if I'm going to go to camp, I'm going on my terms.
Right. And I mean, I ultimately go to camp and had an amazing summer. Through the summer, I had like anxieties. I felt like I was in an enclosed place, which is interesting. Like, I felt like if I would put myself in a bubble where there are doctors, where there are, resources that would be able to help me if I ever needed
Felt
help.
safe. You felt safe.
I felt safe. I put myself in a situation where I felt safe. I felt like nothing could happen to me. I lost a lot of weight that summer. I remember I was scared to like eat snacks because I was nervous I was going to have an allergic reaction, even though I never had an allergic reaction before in my
And
life.
you have no known allergies, correct, at that time?
I think I was allergic to cats always,
Oh,
but
okay.
like, well, that's what is that, like
Right.
sneezing and
So no,
whatever.
but I think
Nothing
it
like
gives a lot.
crazy.
And the reason I bring it up again is to give the gravitas to and the respect and the ultimately understanding the power of anxiety, right? You were actually afraid of an allergic reaction to something that cannot kill you. You're not coming across cats, like, yeah, but it's still that fear is still a part of you.
Yeah, I mean, it was scary, because like I couldn't eat things that I ate my entire life. Like, I was scared to eat when I was alone because I was scared like I was gonna die on the spot. And if I recall correctly, that was like my only real anxiety that summer. I felt, I felt pretty good that summer. Like, it was, I think, like a liberating feeling and a liberating experience, to be able to go to sleepaway camp after such a difficult year. And I felt like, I wasn't in camp with so many Ramaz kids, so it was like I felt like I kind of was free in a way. And it was like I was able to like leave back home my anxiety
Fresh start.
and fresh, exactly, in some way, fresh start. And the summer was amazing. The summer was great. It was an amazing summer. Had a great time with my friends. Sports was great. Hung out with girls. It was great. Like, it was a normal summer in a lot of ways. And I went home from camp like on such a high. Like, camp was great. Like, I hung out with all my friends, won some championships, like whatever. Really like a great summer. And then I remember school started very early that year because Rosh Hashanah was very early. And I remember going to school to Ramaz that first day, and like these feelings start coming back. And I'm like, no, no, like this can't be happening. And I remember getting home that first day of school, after that first day of school, and saying to my parents, I'm not speaking to you until you switch me out of Vermont.
That no, the no, no, and, no thing that you just said, I know I've done it. I know exactly what it is. I know other people have felt it too. It's like one of the things that I feel like everybody who kind of goes through what we've gone through, like, has in common. No, this can't be happening again. No, like, you feel like you're on a hot streak. Everything's going well. And then boom, that first anxiety hits. That hit home here. And I think that it's kind of time to take a little bit of time to give you a lot of credit here. I know challenges are upcoming, but the fact that you were able to get to that point is no small feat. If you think back to what you were saying about how you were living, depressed, super anxious all the time, really had no social life at all, isolated yourself to get to a point where you were able to get out of that comfort zone, whatever bubble it was that you created for yourself, and to find a way is an incredible achievement.
At the time, it was like very, I felt like I had achieved that, and I felt that, you know, I had gotten there. I mean, the anxiety was definitely still present. It's just that I was able to cope with it.
You
and
did.
I think like my first goal with my therapist was cope with the anxiety, cope with the thoughts that you could have a panic attack, and accept them, because if you accept them, you can learn how to live with them. And like, that was basically what I was able to do. I was able to, at that point, learn how to cope with this anxiety.
And what trick, were there some, I don't know, we haven't discussed yet, what tricks or like tips were you doing? Were you doing breathing exercises? Were you on medication? Were you on, were you doing like meditating, breathing exercises? What was going on?
So at the time I was not taking medication. I was seeing my therapist, and then I was seeing a hypnotist.
Interesting.
I don't know. Like, it was like a little bit weird. My parents thought it would be a good idea to try it out. It was a little weird, like hypnosis therapy, where she was trying to like hypnotize me and then trying to prevent me from thinking about the experience at the Ranger game. And I don't know, but she also gave me breathing exercises. And I think the truth is, I think that I figured that if I had a bottle of water with me and I had my cell phone, that like I would be okay, because I can drink water and it would calm me down a little bit. And then I could call my parents, and like that would carry me over until my parents showed up if I needed them.
So that was like your security blanket was a bottle of water and your cell phone, knowing that if you have water, you can take a sip of water and then call for help.
Got it. Exactly. Exactly. So ultimately, about a month into 10th grade, my parents finally, along with my therapist, like I think my therapist said to them, like, he needs a change. Like he really needs like a fresh start. And ultimately I switched to Frisch. And Frisch, I mean, I still had those school feelings, like those anxieties of a kid, like, oh, Monday is so annoying. But my fear of having panic attacks, like it changed. It really changed. I felt like, in a way, like I had started fresh. I was free. But I still had anxiety. I'm not going to say that it wasn't present, but I felt this feeling of freedom, feeling of, you know, I'm not going to have a panic attack. And I became confident in that emotion of knowing that even though I can be anxious, I'm not having a panic attack.
Right. And when people would ask you why you switched from Ramaz to Frisch, what would you tell them?
Honestly, I would say religious reasons. And it's funny that I say that, because I think like a lot of people think of them as like very similar schools. I felt like I had done my time at Ramaz and it just wasn't doing it for me. And I wanted to be in a school where I could start fresh. And that's what it did for me. It gave me a fresh start. Although I knew a lot of kids there, my best friends from high school ended up being kids that I didn't know before, didn't know from camp. And I was able to create this whole new life for myself, which I think really benefited me and helped me you know, continue my growth out of this anxiety or this anxious driven part of my life.
No, for sure. I can just imagine it's hard, right? To people, like, you're the new kid, like, oh, why you switch from Oz? Like, you gotta, at your age, I wouldn't expect, I sure as shit wouldn't have told the truth about it. I don't think I would have, or I wouldn't blame anyone who wouldn't. Like, it's hard. I mean, but obviously a fresh start, it seems to be clear that a fresh start was needed, and you get to not carry around the baggage in a way of who you were at Ramaz, and you can be this new Zach. You could be this new Zach at Frisch, a Zach that still has his underlying anxiety, but doesn't have to live in constant fear.
Right. And I think like that was a very big positive for me. And I mean, like, this was a big step because remember, I was scared of leaving my parents. So now I'm going from Manhattan, where we live, to Paramus every day, which is a 40-minute drive. It's not a phone call away, you know. If I needed my parents, that means 40 minutes, you know, at least, maybe even longer to get to me. And so, like, I sort of had to accept that and allow for myself to continue to grow and to continue to work on my therapy, to accept that, you know, it's not so accessible as being in the city. And, you know, my parents, my father working at Ramaz was never far. My mother, also her office wasn't far, but to now be somewhere that was a little bit secluded and a little bit, you know, it wasn't just a hop, skip and a jump away. I think it was kind of a good mental exercise for myself to accept where I was and to accept the distance. And I think that ultimately helped, you know, definitely played a crucial role in continuing my growth and continuing my coping with my anxiety and my fear of the panic attacks.
You use a lot of interesting words, and I think important words when describing it. The first two that you used were you accepted the situation and then you allowed yourself to be okay with it and to allow the situation that you're giving up some control here, right? You're trying to set the terms but you're basically making a trade-off saying, I know that if I go to this school, my parents are going to be at minimum 40 minutes, potentially longer, away from me. And you're taking away that crutch to an extent, of course. So obviously you still have your phone and you can carry water with you, but you are giving up that space. And then you are allowing yourself to change and to give yourself the space, allowing yourself the space to do what you needed to do. I think that's highly impressive. I mean, you're 16 years old, 15, 16 years old. Like, that's no small feat to be able to do and to change in a new school and to do all that stuff. You know, everybody wants a fresh start, but not everyone's able to take it and kind of run with it. So credit to you, man. That's really impressive.
Thank you. I mean, ultimately, Frisch ended up being a pretty good fit for me. I mean, high school, I would never do it again. I think if I had to do it again, I would do it again at Frisch, but I would never want to do high school again. It was it was a solid experience. Like, I never didn't have friends, but like, I always felt like alone in some way, which was difficult and which was something that took me more years, which I could get into, to kind of, you know, get out of. But high school as a whole ended up being pretty good. Like, I always like wanted a girlfriend, and I remember sitting through therapy like about wanting a girlfriend and being anxious that I'm never gonna find a girl. And whatever, to make a long story short, there I ended up actually meeting a girl my senior year at Saracek. For those of you who don't know, Saracek's a basketball tournament at Yeshiva University where they bring in all of the varsity basketball teams from around the country to play. And I don't really want to go so much into it, but I ended up, you know, finding a girl and having a girlfriend. And for better or for worse, we went to Israel together. And I spent my year of yeshiva and her year of seminary in Israel together. And I think that helped me kind of get away from my parents because I was nervous about leaving my parents for the year. Again, like those feelings coming back to me of, you know, being somewhat existent or coexistent with my, like, you know, needing my parents and you know, needing to lean on them. But I think the fact that I had a girlfriend, I felt like, oh, well, somebody's going to be in the country with me. Like, if anything happens, you know, she's there.
She knows about your history with anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, she, I, I'm, I've always was open about it. Even like while it was happening, I spoke about it to people. I felt like speaking about it was therapeutic for me. So I was very happy to share to anyone that actually wanted to hear about it. So she was aware of it at the time, and we got through the year of Israel. It was an interesting year. I wouldn't say it was a great year. It was interesting.
What do you mean by
I had an
interesting?
okay, meaning like it was interesting in my growth, because everyone goes to Israel for the year. It's a normal thing for everyone to do. And I felt like it was a good experience because it was a year that I was able to just like take off the year in a way. But at the same time, like, I felt like I was wasting my time, where I should have been, where I could have been in college, or I could have, been working. I'm now, in Israel for the year. But that's I think just a generic feeling that some people feel. But ultimately, like, I didn't really have much anxiety that year. I just was like bored at times. I think I spent a lot of time with my girlfriend, and I think it affected my making friends my year in Israel, because I was in like an only boys yeshiva, and I think it really like affected my feelings about being social. Like, I wanted to be included, I wanted to be invited out when people's parents came to Israel to take them out for dinner. Like, I wanted to be a part of it, and I felt like I was lacking in that experience because I had a girlfriend, and I wasn't it was blocking me from making friends. And I always like I always had this like thirst for like having like a good crew, and I felt like in high school I never really had a crew, and like I felt like, oh, I'm gonna go to yeshiva and I'm gonna make this crew, and it didn't happen. So like at the end of the year, when I get home and like I don't have a crew, I'm like, well, I thought I was gonna meet my the groomsmen that were gonna be the groomsmen at my wedding in Israel, and it didn't happen. So I kind of was like, disappointed, and honestly, and I was a little bit depressed about it, because I think I put so much pressure on that year to be the year where I'm going to make, my closest friends for life. And now I don't have, now I come home and I don't have it.
Expectations. I mean, and it's interesting just to hear you talk about it, just because if you kind of zoom out for a bit, here you are at 14, 15, feeling like your life was over. You were talking about sitting in therapy, talking, you're not gonna have a girlfriend, you're not gonna have a job, how am I gonna live my life? You're 14 to 15. Listen, you're going through high school. I've said it before on this podcast, I've said it in my life many times, and I'll continue to say it. High school, modern Orthodox co-ed high schools are the craziest social, high schools itself are the craziest social experiment that nobody talks about and is reevaluated. You stick hundreds, at least in our cases, they're like 400, 500, 600 kids, 700 kids per school, ages 14 to 18, that are all going through puberty, all going through hormonal changes, going through high stress, dual curriculums. If you have extracurriculars, you play a sport or in a club, you have, and then you have to go do all this homework, and you get out. If you get out of high school mentally okay and like with decent grades, you survive. Some people thrive, some people don't. I think it's the biggest advice. I wouldn't even give it, but I would just tell people, make sure your kid gets through it mentally and in good enough shape, and they'll be fine. The focus and the pressures are enough to make anybody crumble, and I genuinely think no one talks enough about how crazy it is. And the fact that you went from that kid at 14, 15 having all those questions, switching schools, starting to get out of your shell, making some friends, adapting to a new environment, going away from your parents, breaking off from, to an extent, a more extent, building on breaking off from the codependency from your parents and finding out who you are as your own individual, and then overcoming that obstacle, right? Am I ever going to have a girlfriend? Senior year comes around, boom, you just create the space and allow yourself to get to that place where you can have a relationship. And then the next task that comes in the year in Israel. Now you're, I mean, the fact that you even went to Israel when you were at a place where you couldn't be like 20 minutes away from your parents, the fact that you were able to go to another country is no small feat. Like, that's, it's important to understand that.
I mean, it was, and I'm happy that I was able to, have the experience. And I feel like that definitely, like, every time I did something after my anxiety and after the panic attack, I call it like the panic attack, like I call that time in my life like the darkest time in my life. And I feel like every time I was able to do something afterwards, it was kind of like saying, in a, excuse my language, like a fuck you to the anxiety, because it was like, you know, I'm like, the way that I learned about it was like, oh, your anxiety is like trying to pull you down. So like when you're conquering your anxiety, you're actually like standing up to it. So like every time like I did something, I was like, you know, fuck you. Like I got to this point, and now I went to my year in Israel and I survived the year in Israel without a problem. And like, it was every time that I was accomplishing the next thing, I was able to just, I felt like my anxiety was slowly, or my anxiety of the dependence on my parents was slowly subsiding.
Which is unbelievable. And I get, you know, you're talking about your expectations and shifted. Oh, I'm supposed to be making friends. My in Israel, I'm expecting it to be this life-changing experience. I'm expecting to come out of it with the best friends that are going to be groomsmen one day when I get married. And only a few years ago, you were thinking to yourself, there's no way I can even get to that place, right? Like, that's important to know. Right. Yeah, obviously, listen, the time you spend in Israel is a lot of high pressure in it. It's a very, you know, I've heard it be called, like, it's very, you kind of figure out some stuff, but I think people put too much on that year. That year, again, is just a way, you're kind of away from home for the first time. You're in a new country. People are speaking a new language. You're meeting a ton of new people at the same time. I don't think I've ever had a year with higher highs and lower lows than my year and a half in Israel. Just met the best people in the world and surrounded by people that I really liked and loved to be around. And I've never felt sadder and more depressed. I don't know, in my life, but that was pretty, got to a point where I got pretty low at times. But you know, you're coming out of that year in Israel and you have your girlfriend there, and you feel like she's your crutch to lean on, which is, I mean, part of being in a relationship. So that kind of makes sense. And do you regret right, not spending more of your time? Like, do you think that being in a relationship held you back?
I think it held me back tremendously. I think that in retrospect, and obviously like I try to live by like, don't regret anything that you do, because it brings you to the next thing in life. I really do believe that if I didn't have a girlfriend, it would have been different. I mean, now looking at today, like, and I'll go through it, like I'm at a very good point. I'm very happy and proud to say that I'm at a very good point. But at the time, I was very upset and I was disappointed in myself, because I felt like I left without the opportunity to have a good group of friends. And not to say that I wasn't friendly with kids, but when you're running to hang out with your girlfriend, or you're running to speak to your girlfriend on the phone, it kind of nixes a lot of social interaction, right, with guys. And when they see that, Zach's like going to speak to his girlfriend, like then they like don't invite you out, and they don't invite you to go drink with them, or they don't invite you to their room, they don't invite you to go to dinner. And it was like all these things that now, I guess, played a role in this, me now not having that crew that I was hoping to have. I think that's what it was. I think it was that I wanted to have like a good crew.
Right. No, like, you're right, and the kids that you get together with. Not, I mean, listen, I think it's possible kids can have a girlfriend and can kind of do, some key people can kind of manage it, but I think it's very difficult. You've something else that's supposed to take up a ton of your time, right? It's like, if you don't go out with your girlfriend, you go hang out with the guys and it kind of looks weird, but you can't connect with them, right? They're the guys that are going to crack square and getting drunk and going out to, right, the bars and trying to meet women and trying to like hook up with girls. Like, it's a very different speed and it's less to control and less to do, right, with. So that year is really, really, I mean, it's really difficult for a lot of people. And you're putting expectations that I need to make the group, I need to make the best friends. Everyone else is doing it. I should have done it. And I listened to, I remember, I know at least in the yeshiva I went to, the rabbis like tried to convince and to talk the kids out of breaking up with their girlfriends because it would take away from their experience. And I mean, I get why they do that. And I don't think they may not necessarily be wrong, but you know, I have friends that dated that ended up marrying the girls that they spent their year with in yeshiva. And maybe they would have broken up and got back together with, but you know, there's a lot there, and it's not so simple. I don't think it's as simple as, oh, looking back. And you know, you say you don't want to live your life with any regrets. Well, it depends how you want to define regrets. I think people I think you can, it's okay to say look back in hindsight and understand why you made the decision you did, and can say, oh, I made the wrong decision, but in the time it felt right. And I think being able to say, no, I don't regret it, but I understand and look back on it and can see all the sides of it, is probably a much healthier way of living life than saying I live a life with like no regrets. I think it's become that common thing people love to say, and no one actually does, especially because everyone likes to make that joke from We're the Millers, where the guy has a no regrets tattoo with the A on it. No, it's, I don't know, you know, the right. reference, it's like, it's become a very popular thing for people to say, and it doesn't really, I don't know how much people actually mean it.
Well, I don't know if it's exactly no regrets, because maybe then I'm not using the term properly, but the way that I feel and the way I want to explain it is that I feel like everything that I've done brought me to the next point. And if I didn't do that thing, I wouldn't have been able to get to this point. And so, you know, going back to that point, you know, I came back from Israel and I went to Queens College, and my girlfriend at the time went to Queens College as well. And it was not such a great time. That was also like a very dark time in my life. Because I was in school in Queens, and there was only, you know, I would be in school for 2.5 hours a day. There was a lot of downtime and a lot of time of doing nothing. And when you have time to think, and when you have time to, you know, where nothing's going on, it's not good. Empty time is not, in my opinion, for myself, wasn't a good thing. And so our relationship went south, and we ended up breaking up. And I went through a very dark time again of like, you know, I'm anxious that I'm never going to find a girl. I'm never going to find a girl. And that anxiety, you know, stuck with me for a while. And even in this time, I was dating different girls, and it wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't like I was completely, you know, not doing this. And it wasn't like I was completely shut down, but I had this like anxiety that like, okay, like I'll meet girls, but I'm not gonna, you know, hit it off with a girl like I did with my girlfriend from high school. And I had like, this was an anxiety of mine. And my therapist, who I, by the way, I worked with the same therapist throughout my life, and to this day, I still speak to him every, you know, now I don't speak to him as often as I used to. Now I speak to him about like once a month, once every 2 weeks. But my therapist, you know, sat me down and he said, Zach, just because, you know, you one time hit it off with a girl so well, and that one time, you know, you felt a spark and like that was it, doesn't mean you're going to meet a girl and it's going to take you that one time. Relationships sometimes need to evolve, and sometimes, you know, on a first date, you may not, you know, see it with the girl, but on the second or third date, you may see it. And even after the third date, you may not even know yet. So after he said that to me, I kind of like took that to heart. And I decided like I would have to, you know, give girls a bit more of a chance. And ultimately, like I ended up, the first girl that I went on more than 3 dates with is now my wife. And, you know, I'm very happy to, you know, to say that I'm at this point where I am married and I'm happily married and I live on my own with my wife, and, you know, we don't live so close to my parents, and I'm not dependent on my parents in an emotional way as I used to be. Thank God I do have a very nice relationship with my parents, and I have a lot of appreciation towards them for everything, because they really were on my side throughout everything, throughout all the hardship, throughout every difficult moment. My parents didn't give up on me. And like last week I finished college, and like I said to my parents, like we did it. And like they come and say, no, you did it. You did it. I said, no, we did it. Because if you guys weren't there with me in therapy, and if you weren't there for me when I needed to switch schools, and if you weren't there for me when I had my panic attacks, and all these moments, if they weren't there for me, like I could not have gotten to this point.
Wow. I mean, listen, first of all, congratulations on finishing college, on getting married, and on your own personal growth journey. But so, Zach, when you're talking about, you know, the dark period in your time in college, can you explain to me what's going on there? What do you mean by dark times?
So I mean, I felt like I had a lot of time on my hands and I wasn't using it properly. I felt like very, I felt like I wasn't being productive with my time. And it made me depressed. Like I really was just lying in bed a lot. I remember spending a lot of time just in bed watching Netflix, and it wasn't a good time for me. And things were going south in my relationship with my girlfriend, and and that didn't help. And ultimately, like, I think, like, I was spiraling, and I needed to make another change in my life. And again, I had to make a change to have, a positive effect on my life. So my girlfriend and I broke up, which, was the first change that needed to be made. I switched from Queens College to Yeshiva University, which was the change that needed to be made. Again, trying to, after, the first time having to, making changes to positively affect my life, I learned that that was something that, if it worked the first time, I would hope it would work a second time. And again,
There's a pa I mean, there's clearly a pattern. By switching places, you feel good, but you say you're spiraling and you're not doing well. You're watching Netflix all day. Are you depressed? How's that affecting your relationships with friends? Are you being active, social life? Like, what's going on in the day-to-day life that while you're in a down spiral? Can you elaborate?
so social life is not so great. I'm just really, like, spending a lot of time just in bed. I'm depressed. I definitely am depressed. Just, like, every day I'm like, oh, what's the point of, like, doing this? Like, what's the point of being in college? What's the point of, working a job? Like, when is there enjoyment in life? And like that, really, like, brought me into, like, this dark place. And again, needing to work with my therapist and with my parents on, coming up with solutions and coming up with ways, to, turn this around. And what my therapist always said to me was, like, because what we've gone through and what we were able to accomplish together, like, we're going to get through this point as well. And he was right. I mean, we I started, therapy again, and it wasn't easy. And switched from Queens College to Yeshiva University, and there were a lot of reasons for this switch. I think, again, I needed a fresh start, but I also wanted to be in a place where there was more, there was less downtime and more,
Structure.
even if there was more, yeah, and more structure. That's a perfect term. There was more structure, and my day was fully scheduled to where my downtime was at night, and at night I could watch sports, hang out with friends. And also where I could be in an environment where I was living with friends. And when I switched to Yeshiva University, right away, I had that where, like, there was not much downtime. And at first, like, the days were very long, and I was like, wow, this is crazy, going from, like, 2.5 hours of school a day to being in class for, 9 hours in college. But ultimately, like, I grew to enjoy that and enjoy that piece of it. And through that, and through classes, and through being in a shir in YU, learning every morning, like, I felt like I was slowly growing back into myself, growing back into that, life is good, building the social life, and being able to start feeling a lot of things that I didn't feel before. Like, I was starting to build this really nice social network for myself, and being able to, feel like what I lacked in my year in Israel, I was actually able to create after my year in Israel, which I didn't think was possible. I thought, my conception was that, after my year in Israel, that's when everyone makes their crew, and that's it. And I was wrong. I was able to create a lot of friends in my first year at Yeshiva University, and through those friends, meet more people. And I was able to really, and I say work my way out of the rut, because I felt like it was such a rut, and I feel like I did put in the work to get out of it, because sitting around in my bed all day would not have positively affected me in any way. And I think if I didn't make these changes, and if I didn't, nip the problem in the ass, I would not have been able to work to where I am today.
And by work, you mean going to therapy and changing schools?
Going to therapy, changing schools, but it's not only going to therapy and changing schools, because a therapist can tell you something, and he can, give you solutions. But if you're not willing to put in that work, and if you're not willing to do what he recommends, then you're just wasting your parents' money.
And what,
honestly,
and what are the recommend? Like, you know, you're talking about work, but I want to know. You know,
if I'm
listening, I want to know like what it is that you're actually doing. What are you incorporating? What are you actually practicing?
So I think one of my issues in college and when I was in Queens College was like I was a homebody and I liked being home. And again, like some of my past feelings coming back a little bit. And like my therapist said, like you have to try to be out of your house, because when you're in your house and you're home and you're sitting in your room and you're sitting in your bed, you're depressed because you're putting yourself in a position where you're not doing anything else. You have nothing else to think about but where you are at the moment. And that's going to be depressing over and over and over again. So when I say I had to work on myself and what work I had to put in was I had to, you know, start, you know, figuring out ways to keep myself busy, figuring out ways to make time to meet up with people and to, you know, try to prevent myself from going back into bed, you know, after I got home from school.
Yeah, I think no. I just want it's important to understand that that is what it is, right? And to give some perspective to it. When you're in those situations, all you're trying to do is, when you feel like your life's crumbling around you and anxiety and you're depressed, all you want to do is feel comfortable and safe. And usually, those actions are right. Let you feel safe when you're laying in bed or when you're at home, and you're basically feeding into that your own anxiety, and you're feeling like you're basically creating that what you feel is a safe environment where nothing bad can happen to you, but it actually doesn't allow you to actually grow out of it. So you basically just end up creating and succumbing to an environment that is not productive for you to live a productive, happier life. And the fact that you were able to identify that and doing the work with your therapist, it seems like he was able to help guide you out of it. And clearly you succeeded, as you were able to change your environment, grow, find the structure that you needed, optimized your life around it to the point where you were able to create a bond and identify in yourself what you were looking for someone to spend the rest of your life with, and then going for it and actually doing it. So that's no small feat. Again, like it seems like the fourth or third or fourth time that you've been able to overcome that in your life and then prove your own self wrong, going full circle to when you were 14 years old, thinking about how can I get a job? How can I graduate college? How can I make friends? How can I date? And then you kind of accomplish all those major overcome and actually shown yourself that you can kind of do it, and actually did overcome those anxieties.
Right. And you know, again, like I'm a big believer in therapy. I think because it helped me. Obviously everyone has their own therapy and their own ways of coping. For me, seeing a therapist was crucial. I think that I was able to work out so many issues and continue to be able to work out, you know, simple issues in relationships in my life with the therapist. But I think that there's this stigma that if you're in therapy, something's wrong with you. And it upsets me when I hear people say like, oh, I don't need therapy. I don't want therapy. Like, even though like people that I'm close to that I know need it and I know would benefit from it. And when they're so closed off and they're saying, no, I don't need a therapist, it's a waste of time. And sometimes it's not my place to say, but if it is my place to say, I'll happily say, well, I see a therapist. And I think that if you want to feel, you know, if you want to at least feel like you're getting some of your problems off of your chest, that's definitely a great opportunity to do so. Again, therapy is not for everyone, and everyone has to do what they're comfortable with. But for me, like if anyone asks me, if, you know, anyone asks me if I would recommend going to therapy, my friends sometimes come to me and ask me because they know I've been seeing a therapist. I say like, I don't see a downside to it, or even a consultation with a therapist, I don't see a downside to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pro therapy person. I've only successfully been able to create a relationship and trust to an extent with one therapist in my life, and that was fortunately before the pandemic, and I was going to lead me to a few questions about it for how that's affected you, but I stopped seeing it. I didn't want to do telehealth, and I've been highly reconsidering starting up again. Just I don't see a downside for it. There are times after like a few years where I started seeing limited upside in it, so I felt like it was time also to move on. I was thinking about it even before the pandemic gave me the opportunity to end it to end my sessions. But I think, you know, the way you started it, the stigma of therapy and a lot of stuff with mental health comes from, you said, you know, the fear that people are going to think that something is wrong with you. But would you say if you're going to go to therapy, that you it's a way to identify that something is wrong? Is that a way?
So I think that going to therapy is it's like the first step, because even if you are in denial about something being wrong, going to therapy shows that you want to do your part, and I think going to therapy, that's your first step, and that's your first doing your own work. So already stepping into a therapy appointment, I think that's your first step of doing work. And for me, like getting to therapy, like that was my first step of doing work, and then listening to what the therapist said that and working on it, that was the second, you know, part of me doing the work.
Right.
Because I mentioned before doing the work.
Right. I think, no, I have a slightly different variation. I think the first massive step you can take is admitting that you can't solve a problem on your own. And then I think therapy is a great way to create a space to allow yourself to do it. Now, just going to sign up and seeing a therapist can be both a massive first step, and it is not going to solve your problems. You need to really dive into therapy, and therapy is difficult. It's hard. It's not something that's easy to do, and it can take time. I know, speaking to a lot of friends and hearing, being able to hear a lot of people's stories with therapists, you know, there are bad therapists out there. There are bad experiences out there, and it can take a lot. It can take time, and it can take money to finally find someone that you can create that allows you to create a space to share openly with. And I think, listen, if you tell anyone, hey, for 50 minutes, or once a week, or twice a week, or whatever many times, whatever it is, you get to go into an office that's safe. No one's going to know what you're talking about unless you decide to tell them to. And you can just talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about. Sounds pretty good to me, honestly. I think everyone could benefit from it. And if you don't, I think the reason a lot of people that don't go to it is maybe they have a friend or a family member or somebody that they know that they can open up to with. And as long as you're creating those bonds and strengthening relationships, I think you're on the path. And if that's you're able to do that without going to therapy, awesome. But if you're somebody who's struggling even a little bit, and maybe you're not struggling, maybe you don't know what's wrong, therapy is a great way to do a lot of self-discovery. I know for myself personally, I didn't know a lot of what I thought until, or what I think, or what I believed until, you know, I'm challenged by a therapist to really say it out loud. And then you kind of hear it out loud. And sometimes you're like, oh, that's stupid, or I don't agree with that. And sometimes you're like, well, I didn't know I actually believed that. Very, very, it's a very, very introspective way to go about finding who you are. It can lead to a lot. And I'm a champion of it. And I'm glad to hear, you know, it's always great to hear somebody who's gone through the process. You hear a lot of negative therapy stories myself. I've talked about some before, but hearing your story about succeeding with a therapist and creating that relationship where it's really helped you is awesome to hear.
Right. And I mean, I think that I just want to touch upon two things that you said. The first thing is that, yes, a therapist sometimes doesn't work out. There are therapists, they're bad therapists, but they're also, you need to have some sort of, I mean, in my opinion, I need to have chemistry. And I hit it off with my therapist. I mean, it took years of you know, this. You have to have this trust in each other, and it is like it's a relationship in a way. And obviously, you know, he can't say anything, so you're kind of in this like place where you feel like free to say whatever you want. But it's sort of, you need to have, in order to feel comfortable. I mean, some people are very much closed off, and if it could be a friend to share with, that's also great. I do think just if everyone could, you know, if anyone has somebody to just share how they're feeling, I think when you keep thoughts in your mind and you keep thoughts inside, it just is not a recipe for anything good. It's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you said you know, as I want to wrap up here, I want to give you a chance now. I have one final question. You know, what have you learned going through your experience? Right, you're still only 22 years old. You're still super young, but you're a person, someone who's overcome so much and just got married and started a new job. What have you learned through your life and your experience dealing with mental health challenges?
So I've learned a number of things. One of them being that you can live with anxiety. you could live with depression. You can overcome this stuff. And I'm not going to lie, I still have anxiety, and it's okay to have anxiety. It's okay. And I feel like me being able to live with my anxiety and being able to accomplish what I've accomplished and hopefully to continue to accomplish, you know, my life goals and my aspirations. I think that if you are able to live with anxiety, it's okay to have anxiety. I wish I didn't have anxiety. I envy the people that aren't the first people to jump on the plane, but like, that's something that I do. When I get to the airport. But anxiety, I think if you're able to live with anxiety and you don't allow it to rule your life, you can do anything. You can, you know, get past anything that you need to.
Yeah, I think anxiety is a mental health challenges are a beast, are a mental beast, and they're really hard to get through. And I think the one takeaway I got just from listening to you speak and from a little bit of my own experience is that you need to find a way to accept your current situation and then figure out a path forward and listen, if you want to be successful, you want to be rich, wherever you it is that you want to overcome, it always starts with the first step. And if you're someone that's depressed and sitting in bed all day, sometimes it's just about making a small change of getting out of bed, and it leads a million small things do add up to the big things. And if you want to be somebody somebody who struggles to do anything, it always starts with that first step. You want to be, no one just goes out and says, I'm going to run a marathon and then goes and runs a marathon or is able. I mean, some people, I guess, have done that before, but if you want to become someone who can overcome something, it always starts with the baby step. It's running a mile, then running two, running three. And you kind of just slowly build up. And something that I personally have learned from you and become completely inspired by is your ability to accept everything that's happened to you and to live with it, knowing that, yes, I live with anxiety, and yes, I know the fear of panic can come back and all these things come back, but I understand that if it does, I'll be able to, I know how I can overcome it. And that confidence and that acceptance of your situation, I think, is everything. It always leads me back to control what you can control and learn to let go of things that you can and accept and be able to understand the difference between the two.
Right. I think that's a perfect point. That you just made, that, you know, that accept what happens and try to accept it, and what you can't, you have to learn how to cope with.
Awesome. Great. And, you know, if there's anything we didn't touch upon yet, last parting messages, thoughts, anything you want to talk about, now's the chance.
Well, I just really wanted to thank you for creating this platform. I think it's really great what you're doing. And I want people to just feel comfortable, being able to understand that, like, mental health is important, and it's important to take care of yourself. And it's important because if you're not mentally capable of taking care of yourself, you're doing a disservice to yourself. And you know, I'm always willing to, speak to people. I've spoken to people about my panic attacks in the past, and I'm always willing to, you know, help people. I'm not a psychologist. I'm going into real estate, so it's not like I have anything to do with psychology. I've never taken a psychology class, but I'm always more than welcome to speak about my experiences. And if anyone would like, I'm more than happy, you know, if anyone would like to reach out, I'm more than happy to give them time and speak to them.
Love it. Zach, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I appreciate it.
David, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much to Zach Rockland for coming on to the podcast. I'm really glad he reached out to me, and I'm glad we were able to set up a time for us to have this conversation. His ability to be so open, honest, and vulnerable about his struggles that he had to endure really, really matters. And if anybody out there is interested in coming onto the podcast to share their story or just to have a conversation about anything mental health related, you can reach me at don'tworryaboutitpodcast@gmail.com or on the Instagram page, Don't Worry About It Podcast, or the Facebook page by the same name. Please do me a favor. Subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and review it. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll see you next week.